start right away from the beginning of the Sedra. Zos chukas haTorah. Mufarshim point out, it should have said, Zos chukas haParah. This is the chukah of Parah Aduma. Why chukas haTorah? It comes to intimate that there's something about Parah Aduma that reflects on the whole Torah. And that is the following. Even though we know that there are mitzvahs that are called chukim, like Parah Aduma, which means that it is super rational, not irrational, just beyond rationale. And then there are mishpatim. Mishpatim are more or less rational mitzvahs, like don't murder. It's a rational mitzvah. Why Parah Aduma can take away tumah of the person who came in contact with the dead, right, is super rational. Still, the truth is that nothing in the Torah is totally rational that we can understand it completely. Even murder. The black and white of murder is rational. Right? It's wrong to go and shoot somebody in the street for no reason. But there are many gray areas that the Torah considers murder that I would not want to debate somebody purely from a rational standpoint. For instance, euthanasia. That is not young people in Asia, but mercy killing. Okay? Mercy killing. I wouldn't want to debate somebody as to the rational basis of permitting mercy killing. Somebody is 119 and a half and he's suffering terribly and wants to be put out of his misery by giving him some extra dose of morphine, right? He's begging you to do it. I wouldn't say rationally that there should be a reason why not to do it. The Torah says it's murder. Because a person is not the arbiter of his life. Life is given to you and only God can take it away under most circumstances. And therefore it's considered murder.
Nothing in
this world is very clear. There are situations when it would be okay or whatever, or at least not to do heroic things to prolong that person's life.
So
right.
DNR is
what? Well, do not resuscitate is dependent. If the it means don't give food, water, or air, then it's 100% prohibited. You always must give food, water, air, otherwise you're killing somebody. If it means don't use heroic methods to bring a person back after he's died by resuscitating him, which was what really means, do not resuscitate, then in certain circumstances, depending on what illness the person has, what the prognosis is, if you bring him back, how long he could live, there are cases where it would be okay not to resuscitate. Or not to give the person drugs that would prolong his life. But to deprive a person of food, air, or water is basically starving the person or asphyxiating him, which is murder. Okay, I didn't want to get into this. Let's talk about something else. How about abortion? I wouldn't want to debate somebody rationally about abortion either. I ask you a rational argument for abortion. But the Torah says that basically it's murder, according to most opinions, right? Or it's at least prohibited. So even the things that are patently rational, that's only in the black and white areas. In the gray areas, they're also beyond rationale. God said, and that's it. So all laws of the Torah are basically, when it comes down to it, chukim. And even the chukim have rational ideas behind them. Except the difference between a chok and a mishpat, therefore, is it predominantly rational or only a very small portion rational? Even the Parah Aduma can be explained. I'll give you an example of how to explain the idea of Parah Aduma. The main problem of Parah Aduma is that it makes the people who are involved within it impure, and yet it purifies the people that are sprinkled from this Parah Aduma. How could the same thing, right, have an effect to make some people pure and some people impure? And on a very simple level, it's not such a hard thing to understand. A person who's healthy, who takes certain drugs, is going to become sick. But if you're sick and you take those same drugs, you'll become healthy. So it's possible for the same thing, depending on the person who's taking it, to have different effects. It's not such an irrational thing that we can't understand that it exists in nature. But let me explain to you. The Medrash says that the dead body does not make a person tummy. In other words, the dead body himself is not something that's contagious, that there's this tumor that comes from it that somebody catches. And the paraduma doesn't make you tar. God said, I said that a dead body makes somebody tummy, and that's why he's tummy. And I said that the paraduma makes you tar, that's why you're tar. It's not a natural effect. Now, what does that mean? So let me tell you what I think. And again, there's a million different possibilities. This is one possible rational explanation of how it works. Death, as well as all tumor is somehow related to death. What's the major tumor? A dead body, right? People come in contact with a dead body. That's the major tumor. But all the other tumors have a connection to a concept of death. Tumors of things that emit from a person's body, right, are usually the sexual liquids, right, that represent life-giving properties. They have the potential for producing life, and they come out of the body in a way that they don't produce anything, right, whether it's by a woman when she's a nida. So that is the breakdown of her ability to get pregnant for that month. And that's what Dam Nida is, or Dam Ziva. And by a man, a seminal emission, same idea. It's also a kind of death. Asherets. There are certain kinds of animals that are metame. Right? Now, what's the connection over there? Connection over there is more or less the following. What is death? Death is seemingly the separation between the physical side of man and the spiritual side. The neshama and the body separate. And it gives the appearance that the spiritual and physical worlds can be separate. They don't necessarily have to go together. Which means that the spiritual represents God. That means God can be separated from the world. The world has an existence to itself aside from God, which is not really true. Because even what keeps that dead body going is the Ribbono Shel Olam. But it appears like there's a separation between the physical and spiritual almost totally. Wherever there is a separation between the physical and spiritual, which is the kind of death, there this idea of tumah, which we'll get to in a second, what that is, comes into play. Now, there are certain things that if a person eats them, it's metamtem es halev. It verstops your heart. It doesn't mean that it gives you cholesterol and clogging of the arteries. That's physical. What it means is that the heart over here means a person's ability to be aware of spiritual things, right? The knowledge of the heart. And it separates between your ability to be aware of spirituality and becoming more physical. A lot of the non-kosher things have that ability, but the one that's the worst is these shrutzim, these eight different kinds of creepy, crawly creatures that if you eat them, they separate between your physical side and your spiritual side. It's the same kind of idea as death, only it's a more conceptual kind of death. The same concept. So when a person comes in contact with a dead body, it has an effect on him. Whether he knows it or not, it affects his neshama subconsciously. And it appears like I see a world where there can be a dead body who is separated from his soul. That means that the spiritual and the physical can be separated, which gives me the impression that God and the world are not necessarily together. The world has an existence to itself. The physical world can exist separated from God, just like the body can exist separated from the neshama. The neshama in the body is like the godliness in the physical world. God is, so to say, the neshama of the universe, as our neshama is to our body. So when I come in contact with a dead body, it throws me off subconsciously, and my neshama is troubled, because it appears that there can be a separation between the physical and the spiritual world. The truth is that's not the case. So what do? We, in order to resolve that question, we have the paraduma. I can't go into all the details of the paraduma, but just in general. It says the paraduma is a atonement for the sin of the golden calf. The golden calf, gold, has a reddish hue to it, so it was like a red calf, the golden calf. So the red heifer is the mother of the golden calf. The Medrash says, when a kid goes and makes a problem, who do you call to clean up? The mother. So let the mother clean up for what her child did, meaning the following. The way the Maharal learns is, bring the mother. Why? Because they looked at the calf as a power to itself, separated from God. You can have this physical thing, that's what idolatry is. Physical, natural powers separate from God that somehow control the world. So bring the mother. This calf didn't come by itself. It came from someone else. And that calf came from someone, that mother came from another mother. And if you trace everything back to its source, you come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So even though things appear in front of you, right, to be separate from God, but nothing separate from God. If you trace it back to its source, you come back to God. Right? So if you constantly trace things back to their source, you come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? A baby who drinks a bottle thinks that the bottle gives it nourishment. When he gets a little bit older and he sees that the mother pours milk into the bottle from a container, he begins to think that he's been giving the bottle thank you, and really the container deserves the thank you. Containers give milk. Then he sees that the milk container you take out of the refrigerator, so he realizes, no, refrigerators give milk. Then he sees that the store sells these milk containers, so the store gives milk. Gets a little bit older, goes out, sees cows. Cows give milk. Then he sees the cows eat grass. Grass gives milk. And if you keep going back to the original cause, you come back to God. So we see things in front of us that seem to be separate powers, but the truth is if you trace everything back to its source, you come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, one of the just very simple surface ideas of somebody who sees a dead body, it upsets him subconsciously on a spiritual level, where his neshama is in a quandary. It appears to me like the physical world and spiritual world can be separated. Bring the paraduma, right, which reminds you that even though there appear to be physical forces in this world that are separate from the spiritual world, it's not true. If you trace everything back to its source, you'll come back to God. God is always connected to the world. It can't exist without it. So what have you done? You have a question, and you've resolved the question. This is all on a subconscious, spiritual level, answering the question of the soul. The soul is presented with this problem, and the soul is answered by the paraduma. Okay. If somebody has a question bothering them, okay, they have a question on belief or whatever, and you sit down and you answer their question, so they are now okay, right? You've resolved their problem. What happens if somebody had no questions? Nothing, this idea didn't bother him at all. And you start to give him an answer to a question that never bothered him. What are you doing now? You are awakening the question in the person. Therefore, somebody who had the question, who came in contact with the dead, and now you present him with this answer of the paraduma, makes him tar. It resolves this question. But the person who never had the question, he was tar. And you give him an answer to a question he never asked, what are you doing? You're bringing up the question. He becomes tummy. So that could be one way of understanding. It also has a connection to something later in the Sedra. It says that the Jewish people were not grateful for the man. They spoke against the man. They didn't have Hakara Satov. So God sends serpents to bite them, kill them, And he told Moshe Rabbeinu, when he prayed to save them, make a nachash ha-nechoshes, right? A copper snake, right? Which is the symbol of the medical world now. Right? That's where it comes from. And the people who look at it will be healed. So the Mishnah asks, the chinochash meimis or nochas mechayim. Does the snake, what's it called, heal, or the snake kills? Because they looked at the snake, that's when they got better. What it means is that if they looked up at the snake and they subjugated their hearts to God, then they were healed. And if not, not. So the obvious question is, why do you need a snake? Why didn't Moshe just stand there and, with a sign, look up and subjugate your hearts to God? What do you need the snake for? It fits this idea. Why are people not grateful to God for all the good things he does to them? One of the reasons is because they don't connect the good that they get with God. One reason is they don't recognize any good. They think everything's coming to them. So the first stage is recognize good. Hakaras HaTov doesn't mean to be grateful. It means to recognize good. Recognize it. Know that you're getting something good. But the second stage is, now, who do you attribute that good to? So most people attribute it to the last, cause that they can see. So my good that I got a paycheck this week comes from my boss. It's very nice, but where'd your boss get the money? Okay, so he got it from whatever his business. Where did the business get the ability to exist? If you trace things back to the source, you come to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if you recognize good and you know how to trace it back to its source, you'll come back to God. It says that's one of the milas of saying Ashrei every day. Right? Every day we say Ashrei 3 times a day, and whoever says Ashrei is guaranteed a share in the world to come. Doesn't mean just you say it, it means you understand the idea. Ashrei has two things to it. One is Poseach es yodecha u'masbi'a l'chol chai ratzon, that God provides everything what it needs to exist in this world. And the second thing, it has the Aleph base. You need both of them. If you want to really appreciate that God takes care of everything in the world, then you can't attribute things to secondary causes. You have to know how to trace things back to their source. So the Aleph base teaches you how to see an order in this world, so you can trace things back to their source, and then you'll come to the realization that God is the source of all existence in this world. So therefore, when people complain about the mon, they didn't realize, they don't recognize the good. Part of the problem is that they don't recognize it and they don't attribute it to God, right? They just see what's in front of them. Therefore, the correction for that is, let them look up and see the snake. The snake is what caused them now to be dying. This same snake can make them live. So it's not the snake, obviously. So what is it? If you look beyond the snake and see what the cause is, which is God, then you'll be healed. But if you don't look beyond the snake, you think the snake is going to heal you, just as much as the snake is what's damaging you, then you miss the point completely. So the snake is there to give people the test. Are you going to attribute it to the snake, or are you going to look beyond that and see that it's really the Ribbono Shel Olam? So this is the whole concept of being able to look beyond the forces in front of you, the dead body in front of you, and realize that still, even that body to exist, forget about to live, has to have God wanting it to exist. So even the physical world, where it's seemingly separated from spirituality, is still, God is there keeping it going. That is what the Paraduma subconsciously, spiritually, tells the Neshama. And again, if you answer a question that someone has, you resolve their problem. If you answer a question that nobody had, you are just bringing up the question to them and therefore creating the problem. So people who are Tahar become Tameh when they come in contact with the Paraduma. And people who are Tameh become Tahar. So even though there is a segment, a certain amount of rationality, but all the details, why it has to be with all these things, it's impossible to understand. It's beyond our... What we can understand about mitzvahs is not the reasons for mitzvahs. The reasons for mitzvahs are basically because God said to do it. Right? Just like the reasons for eating. So I'm going to ask you, why do you eat these foods? Because that's how God made the world, right? The why do we eat grains and not rocks? Oh, very simple, because rocks don't have things that nourish people, and grains have things that nourish people. Okay, why? Why are people nourished by what's in grain and not what's in rocks? Well, that's the way God made the world. There's no rational answer to that. That's God could have made the world that you get nourished by rocks, right? But he didn't. He made it you get nourished by these things, carbohydrates and proteins or whatever. That's the way he made the cells in the body. He could have made the cells differently if he wanted to, right? But he didn't. He couldn't make us live on oil, gasoline, whatever. But he didn't. So it all boils down to the fact that's God's will, right? Now, on the other hand, once we are eating, because that's the way God made the world, God wants us to enjoy it. It should be palatable to us. So he gave the food a nice color and a nice aroma and a nice taste. But the reason you eat is not for the taste. Because if that's the reason you eat, then there are plenty of artificial tastes that you could put on cardboard and eat them and have really enjoy it, and you'll die of malnutrition within a few days because you'll be eating cardboard with a nice taste. And even if the food doesn't taste good, right, it's already old, stale, but that's all you have to eat, that'll keep you alive. So the taste isn't the reason for eating, it's an extra added perk. It's an extra added enhancement, but it's not the reason. Same thing with mitzvahs. The reason we do mitzvahs the way we do is because that's the way God made the world. Why do I put little black boxes on my arm and head and not wrap them around my leg? Or have round paisley boxes? That's the way God made the world. Little black boxes do the purpose, and not just like carbohydrates and proteins do, and not the minerals that are in rocks.
So why would you ever complain about the man? One had both. One had any taste you wanted, and gave them all the physical stuff that they needed.
Why were they complaining about it? Because they wanted something they could sink their teeth into. They wanted something that wasn't so spiritual. Right? They were tired of being people who lived on a different plane. They wanted to be more physical. That was a problem. So, therefore, when it comes to reasons for mitzvahs, we don't speak about reasons for mitzvahs. The reason for the mitzvahs, that's what God said. That's how he made the world. Just like the physical world, this is the way things work. In the spiritual world, this is the way they work. And that's all because God wants it to work like that. Right? There's no... Well,
going back to last week's surgery.
Just let me finish the thought, okay? And then just let me finish the thought. On the other hand, when we speak about ideas behind the mitzvah, we call tamei ha-mitzvah, the taste of the mitzvah. It's a taste. It's something that makes it palatable to us. It's an understanding, but it's not the reason. What's the big difference? What if the taste doesn't apply in a certain situation? So what do you say? Well, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. No. Because even if the taste is not there, but the nutrients are there, you still have to eat that thing. If you have nothing else to eat, you have to eat that. And that'll keep you alive and not something just with a taste. But if the taste is not a taste, it's a reason. If the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. So we don't know reasons for mitzvahs. Reasons, that's what God made the world, that's what he says, that's the reason. The taste is an extra added enhancement, but it never should take the place of the cause of the mitzvah, the reason. Yeah, yeah.
Then you're talking about the tamei ha-mitzvah. Wasn't that the downfall of Korach? Because the techeles was blue, which there was a reason for the techeles when it reason.
And that reason should be taken care of, right? Exactly. Yeah?
Yeah.
That was Korach's problem too. Right? He thought that he understood, right? And therefore, since he understood, this is the reason, this is irrational.
So should we feel we understand, or should if we understand?
We should feel as they did at Har Sinai. Nasa v'nishma. What does Nasa v'nishma mean? I'm going to do it whether I understand it or not. Because just like I don't get up on top of a building and say, until I understand gravity, it's not going to affect me. Right? I'm jumping off this building because I don't understand gravity anyway. I don't really understand it, and therefore I'm impervious to it. It's absurd. You can understand it or not, if you jump off a building, gravity is going to make you hit rock bottom. So, person says, look, whether I understand it or not, this is the way God made the world, and I have to do the mitzvah no matter what. But, there's also a nishma. I want to understand as much as I can, not because I want to understand the reason and cause from God's side. I want it to be palatable to me, just as much as I want to eat, I want to enjoy it. So God gave me things that can make the mitzvahs palatable to me. I want to understand as much as I can. So we should want to understand, but with the limitation that our understanding is not to understand the reason and therefore to decide whether that reason applies or doesn't apply. The reason is God said to do it. And unless God said in this situation not to do it, you have to do it whether you understand it or not, whether it makes sense to you or not. But at the same time, I want to understand as much as I can. It's not a prerequisite for doing it. It's an extra add, an enhancement. It's a taste. That's the difference. Okay, another thing from the Sefer. Some say that the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, I want to say this week that the Torah prefaces the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, where the punishment was he doesn't go into Eretz Israel, with two things that come before it, Parah Aduma and the death of Miriam. To tell me that we don't understand God's laws and we don't understand God's judgments either. Why did Miriam die? She didn't do anything wrong. Right? And most of the women went to Eretz Israel, even the women between 20 and 60, because they didn't sin by the sin of the spies either. So most of these women entered Eretz Israel. And poor Miriam, she didn't do any sin. Elamai, that was her time to die. Can't ask questions. That's right. She didn't do anything wrong. That's her lifespan was over, and she died without going into Eretz Israel. There's absolutely no explanation that I know of. That was it. And Parah Aduma tells me we don't understand God's laws. Right? So therefore, when we come to Moshe Rabbeinu, and God tells him, speak to the rock, hit the rock, whatever, we don't know what exactly he did wrong. So you already know from Parah Aduma that we don't understand the laws 100%. And the punishment that he got, whatever he did wrong, the punishment, he shouldn't take the Jewish people into Eretz Israel, he should die outside of Eretz Israel, we don't understand God's punishments either. So the Torah gave us a preface with Parah Aduma and Miriam to set us up for the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. So there are about 10, 11 different opinions what the sin was. Rashi says that he should have spoken to the rock instead, he hit the rock. And some say he hit the rock twice instead of once. Or that he got angry, lost his temper, and because of that he was punished. One opinion is, because he called the Jewish people Morim. He said, Shimu no ha-morim, listen you rebels. And because he called the Jewish people rebels, that's why he was punished. And we have other great leaders also who basically didn't appreciate who the Jewish people were, castigated them wrongly, not just gave them Musa. We'll see in 1 second what the difference is. And they also were punished. Eliyahu, Hosea, Yeshayahu. See in 1 second. But let's first understand that. So they asked, on that opinion, if that was a sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, then he did it again, and he wasn't punished again. Even worse. Later on, in his farewell shiur to the Jewish people, he says, Mamrim hayisim im Hashem miyom daiti etzem. You rebelled against God, you were rebelled against God from the time I know you. Now that sounds much worse than Shimu na Hamorim. Listen, you rebels, this is how you are rebels since the day I know you, you rebelled against God. So why wasn't he punished for that? And secondly, if he was punished so seriously for saying Shimu na Hamorim, how could he do it again? So they say the difference is like this. The Midrash HaTorah of Shmuel of Shlomo Astruk, he was a Talmud of the Rashba. He says, I'll give you, he didn't say what I'm going to tell you now, but you have a child, 6-year-old child, and he steals from your wallet. Kids do it all the time, right? They see parents have money, they go to the store, they buy things. I want money. Where do you get money from? Pocketbooks, right? So this is common property. They don't really realize they're stealing, right? So they go to the mother's pocketbook, take some of the money, and go buy some candy in the store. Happens. It's not unusual. Now you want to discipline that child. You don't want them to grow up to be ganavim. So you can relax one of two ways. You can call the child in and say, you're a thief. You stole from my pocketbook. Okay? Or you can say, you know, you're really a good little boy or girl, but you did something terrible. You stole money. What's the difference between the two? The first one brands the child, calls them what they are. You are a thief. What's going to come from that? Well, my mother said I'm a thief. So what do thieves do? Steal. It'll just promote living up to what the mother branded their child to be. You're a thief. But if you understand the child's not a thief, child's a good little kid. He just did something bad because he wanted to go get some candy and he doesn't have the money and he knows the money is in the pocketbook, so he stole. He did something wrong. That doesn't make him somebody evil. It means that he did something evil. You have to be able to distinguish between branding the person and their actions. When Moshe Rabbeinu said, Mamrim Ha'isim Hashem, he was describing the actions of the Jewish people. That's 100% okay. You could be great people, but you do terrible things, you need to be given Moshe rebuked. But to call the Jewish people Morim, you are rebels, so that God said, Yan lo hemantim bi, you didn't believe in me. Because I chose the Jewish people. I wouldn't choose people who are rebels. If they're intrinsically no good, would I choose them? Would I give them the mon every day and the be'er? Right? Look what I did for Hagar just because she was a handmaiden in Avraham's house. Surely his children, his descendants. You have to, if you don't believe in the Jewish people, you don't believe in me. Because I chose them. So what are you telling me? I made a mistake. They're not good people. So Moshe Rabbeinu intimated there's something wrong with the Jewish people, the etzem, intrinsically. That you can't do. Even a leader can't do that. The Jewish people as a people are tzaddikim. Potentially. They may do terrible things, but that's what they do, not what they are. That's the difference. And it says the same thing with Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu said, I am a person with defiled lips, and I dwell amongst a people with defiled lips. And God said to him, you can say whatever you want about yourself, but don't tell me the Jewish people are people of defiled lips. That's branding them. You have no right to do that. And because of that, he was punished later. That when they, wanted to kill him, he hid in a tree. Right? He got swallowed up in a tree. And the only part of him that was vulnerable was his lips. That's where they were able to kill him. Took an axe and they got to his lips and that's where they killed him. Because he's called the Jewish people, right? The Gemara says by Hosea, God said to Hosea, your children have sinned. So God expected Hosea to defend them and say, what do you mean my children? They're your children. They're the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're basically good people. So what did Hosea say? You know, you're right. They're terrible people. Why don't you switch them with another people? Right? So God said, what am I doing with this old man? Right? Wants to switch the Jewish people with another people. I expected him to ask for mercy, and he's agreeing with me. So God told him, either prophetically or actually, go marry a harlot, have children with her, and then he told her, get rid of her. Divorce her. He said, I can't divorce her. She's my wife, my children. He said, you can't divorce this harlot and the children from her, and you expect me to change the Jewish people with some other people? You don't understand what the relationship we have. And the same thing with Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi came to God after the Maisa with the Har HaKarmel, where he proved that God is God, the fire came down from the heavens, and he sees that right away the people went back. So he gave up. He went to Har Sinai, he says, Rabbanu Shalom, I resign. I can't be anymore. The people are terrible. Ofruis brisecha, they have transgressed your bris, they broke the covenant. So God showed him an earthquake and a hurricane and all kinds of things, and that's not where God was. Where was he? In a still small voice. Which went to say him, you know, you can rant and rave or whatever, go back to the people, speak to them nicely, deep down inside they're good people, you can make an impression on them. Yeah, maybe it'll be short-lived, but they have good potential. And Eliyahu didn't get the message, and he said, I can't go back to these people, they're terrible people, they broke your covenant, so the Baruch Hashem said, you can't be anymore the leader, you have to come up to Shemayim, you can't be amongst the people anymore. And he made him Malach HaBris. He has to go to every bris, Eliyahu Navi, to testify to the fact that the Jewish people didn't break the covenant, they keep the bris. And a little Jewish baby, 8 days old, is pure, doesn't have to do anything. He has that purity within him, and all Jews have that. They may do terrible things throughout their life, but deep down, they're good people. So leaders, even the greatest leaders, have to recognize the ultimate purity and potential of the Jewish people as a people. And they can rebuke them and they can be upset about their actions, but it never should be confused with their essence is. Because if you doubt that the essence of the Jewish people is ultimately good, right, and deep down they're really good people, then you don't believe in God, because God chose us. Doesn't he know who we are and what we are? So if you believe in God and you trust him, you trust the fact that he made a good choice. So it must be that he knows that deep down we're okay. Because if you don't believe in that, then you don't believe in the Rabbanu Shem's choice either. That's part of the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu.
But he got angry with us on so many occasions, even this week, etc.
That?
And Hashem got angry with us, and annoyed with us.
Yeah, because parents can be angry with their children and rebuke them, but they're still their children. Right? They're not divorcing them or disowning them. Right? There's a difference between breaking that relationship, which can't be done. Still my children. And that's what the Rabbanu Shem says, right? God, the Jewish people thought when we went into exile that God basically divorced us and separated and abandoned us. And the Navi said, can a woman forget her child? She can be angry with the child, but she can forget that it's her child? Okay, even that could happen. There are mothers that could, who knows, kill their children, right? But the Rabbanu Shem says, that's so unusual, right? But it could happen. By me, it can never happen. You're my children. I chose you, right? As much as you do terrible things and I rebuke you for it and I'll punish you for it or whatever and sometimes hit you terribly and punish you terribly, but that doesn't take away that the fact that you stole my children.
Doesn't it kind of show that you're said, does the punishment, does it really fit the crime? It really does fit the crime because of just like Eliyahu, when he lost faith in Am Yisrael, God said this, you don't belong in this job anymore. Moshe kind of was getting burned out.
100%.
And therefore, it's not even a punishment. You're not the right leader anymore.
Right.
And it's not even a ridiculous. It makes 100%
right.
sense.
100%.
His reaction was different now than the first time when they didn't have water there. He fought for Am Yisrael. And here he said, he was burned
right.
out.
100%. Excellent. According to this explanation, right, it's not that God punished him, he can't go there. You're not the leader anymore. That's it. Yeah, excellent.
And his actions throughout the end of, throughout Bamidbar, towards the end of the 4 years, you see that he wasn't the same Moshe that he was at the beginning.
But part of the reason is that it wasn't the same people anymore. It's not the people he took out of Egypt, which he had a connection to and could have brought them into Eretz Israel. It's a different generation who are going to live a different kind of life. That was not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the miracle, and this was going to be a natural. He wasn't. In fact, my drasha for Shabbos, which I'm not going to tell you yet, right? I'm going to say that it's that Miriam had to die, and Aaron didn't. What did he do? They all had to die.
But the Rabbanu Shem,
because it was a different generation, they couldn't be the ones to bring Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. But God wanted to show. Right, he wanted. It was all he framed them. He staged this so people would understand that Moshe Rabbeinu just can't continue on. That's all. But it fits with what you're saying.